Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good.
Good. It is fall. The weather is changing a little bit out here on the West Coast, although most people would assume that we are having a cloudy day here in Northern California, but the astute observer would recognize that those are not clouds up there. They're big plumes of smoke, and it stinks here.
Yeah, that's terrible. We've been reading about it.
Yeah, it's horrible. Anyways, today we're going to talk about, I think, a super important, under-recognized problem, which is geriatric depression. It's serious. It affects a lot of people. It's associated with a lot of comorbidities. It impairs functioning. It causes excessive use of healthcare resources. And it can lead to suicide, which is, again, relatively unrecognized in the geriatric population. It's important to recognize that late-life depression is under-recognized and inadequately treated. In fact, in the United States, men and older African-Americans, both men and women, are at even greater risk of having their depression unrecognized. Currently, about 80% of mental health treatment for depressed older adults is delivered by people like you listeners, primary care doctors, which means we've got a pretty big responsibility to keep our ears peaked and listen between the lines for what might be a depression. It's also important to recognize that depression is not a normal part of aging. It's not something that we all have to look forward to, and it's not something that people just have to live with. Admittedly, sadness and grief are normal responses to life events, and some of those life events increase as you get older. You lose loved ones, your social status changes, you retire, you might have some loss of income, you might move from one house to another house, and those can result in sadness and grief, but that's not depression.
Mike, you're bumming me out. This sounds terrible.
No, it's
I don't want to get older.
I know, but I'm getting to the point that it is treatable. Rates of depression are about 2% in the geriatric population overall, which means that Mark, you have about a 98% chance of not being depressed. But for those patients who have sort of comorbid conditions, it can reach as high as 30% of people who are hospitalized or have serious medical problems can be depressed. And again, it is something that's amenable to treatment. There are risk factors for late-life depression, including females, social isolation, being a loner, meaning that perhaps you're widowed, you're divorced, you're separated, being poor, being in pain, poor sleeping habits, and some sort of impairment. So we all treat this condition. We see it probably much more than we recognize. When we think of therapy, we need to think of sort of two arms of therapy, psychotherapy or non-pharmacologic therapy, which has been shown to be very effective, as well as our old friends, the medications. Mark has found a poem this week from the American Journal of Psychiatry, published in 2015. It starts on page 561. It looks at two drugs, citalopram and methylphenidate. Both of them offer a chance for treatment. This particular study looks at how they work both on their own and together. It asks the clinical question, what is the comparative effectiveness of citalopram and methylphenidate, or both, when taken together for the treatment of depression amongst geriatric patients? Mark, this is a randomized controlled trial. What do they find?
Yeah, this was interesting, I think, primarily because it was kind of notable for being the first study to take this question on, or at least this approach on. They had about 150 older patients, and they randomized them to one of three groups. So one group got citalopram plus placebo, another one got methylphenidate or Ritalin plus placebo, and another got both active treatments. There was not an untreated control group. All of the patients had unipolar depression. They all scored at least 16 on the Hamilton Depression Rating Scale, which is a pretty well-known standardized instrument. Their actual average score was about 20 when they started, and higher scores are worse, lower scores are better. And they all had a fairly normal mini mental state exam. So this wasn't cognitive decline masquerading as depression. And so they excluded folks who were felt to be at risk for suicide or had violent behavior and a few other exclusions. So they then put them on these medications, and they titrated the methylphenidate beginning at 2.5 milligrams twice daily up to a maximum of 20 milligrams twice daily. For the citalopram, they started at 20 milligrams, but they were they increased it to 40 or even 60 milligrams a day if there was an insufficient response after a month. Those who got only the Ritalin, only the methylphenidate, had a remission rate of 30%. Now, remission was defined as a Hamilton score that went from 20 down to 6 or lower. So it's 30% for those on Ritalin, 42% at the lowest dose of citalopram, up to 69% at the highest dose. The change in the HAM-D scores, so the improvement was greater and faster with the combined therapy than with the individual therapy groups. So it wasn't a big difference, though, and I think it's important to sort this out and some of the limitations. One is, you know, you started with these scores around 19 or 20. It went down to 9 in the Ritalin-only group, 7 in the citalopram-only group, and about 5 in the combined group. So fairly small changes, you know, a couple points on this scale that I believe has 52 points total. They defined remission as a score of 6 or less, and I'm also a little concerned about that because it looks like they defined remission post hoc, and so they found, you know, the one that would make the combined therapy look better is what it appears. Now, that may not be the case. It wasn't really clear from the write-up how they chose this this cutoff. There were no significant differences in cognitive changes. They basically improved in all of the groups. And I think it's important to note that the citalopram was dosed for many patients at higher than what's recommended. FDA currently recommends 20 as a maximum dose. In Britain, they recommend 40. At doses of 60, there's a significant risk of QT prolongation, which can be dangerous. And they didn't see that. They didn't see any problems in this study, but they only had 150 patients, and only a small number were on the very high dose of citalopram. But I would not endorse that high a dose, certainly, you know, for our listeners. So bottom line, this is the first study to look at this idea of combining methylphenidate with an antidepressant, and it showed that there was some benefit to the combination compared with the individual drugs. There wasn't a dose response seen with the methylphenidate, so it didn't really matter what dose they were on. And so if you're going to do this, I would start at a low dose and probably stay at a fairly low dose of the methylphenidate, 2.5 to 5 milligrams twice daily. And I would be cautious about going higher than 20 milligrams of the citalopram as well, given some of those other concerns we just mentioned.
Well, I wonder if those folks that were taking the methylphenidate, if they had a better opportunity or higher performance measures when they were trying to measure or remember their elements of the periodic table or table.
They did much better on their quizzes than
yes.
the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Exactly.
No, there was, but where the symptom improvement was seen was in sort of activating kind of symptoms. So the apathy, there was less apathy, less of those sort of the negative symptoms of depression.
So with the Hamilton depression score, the patients went sort of on average from 19 to about 6, which is statistically significant. But is that the kind of difference that either the person or someone who's living with the person would notice? Is it clinically meaningful?
It's borderline at best. So the Hamilton Depression Scale has 21 items, and there are 3 or 4 points in each one. So a difference of a couple points is unlikely to be clinically significant. It's right, I would say, on the border of that.
So is it fair to say that this is something that we should watch and perhaps if other things fail, consider, but we're still waiting for some more conclusive data before we begin dual treatment with a stimulant and an antidepressant?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see more data than just there were 50 people basically in the combined treatment group and 50 in each of the other groups. You know, this needs to be replicated, but it's certainly good for our listeners to know about, and it's a different way of thinking about treating depression and something that, you know, may become standard of care. I agree with you, Mike. I don't think we're quite there yet.
Okay. Great, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thanks.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.